Well, I'm no captain, respected head of the sleepless. I'm just a player, and given my level, I cannot get on any of the ships, even as a cabin boy. So, Ross, maybe enough already, hm? The Baroness looked at me, strict and a little tired. I know you're the navigator, I'm sure of it. We spent so much time and many resources to figure it out. I'm sure of it 100%. You're the navigator. So maybe stop evading, and we can just talk? Okay. I gave in and took a deep breath, slowly released it, and at the same time pronounced the heavy phrase, I'm the navigator. What's next?
We talk, repeated the Baroness, without expressing any emotion. For example, on your admittance to our fleet, I am ready to listen to your conditions, requirements, and so on. And mind you, I'm not asking you to join our clan, and I'm not asking you to give us the spell. Honest, a navigator is needed for a fleet, and a navigator needs a fleet to command.
There are a lot of clans, I noticed. Why should I join yours?
Now we're talking, commended the Baroness. According to the forecasts of our analysts based on inner intelligence and other reliable sources, our fleet is currently fifth largest in Valdira, and the first in quality. This is a very powerful argument in favor of the fact that our fleet will successfully make it to the shores of Zargrad, in one piece, rather than in the form of broken debris rendered on the surf.
The fifth largest? I said, just for fun, at the same time cursing myself for not bothering to find out in advance. And who is leading? In any case, I was now sitting next to one of the most knowledgeable people in Valdira. It would be a sin not to listen and not to ask anything.
The Acolots, briefly said the head of the sleepless. The first three places are occupied by them. But this is understandable. They grow the fleet instead of building it. Plus, they had ones originally, and are now just upgrading and cultivating new types of ships. And in fact, not ships, but huge monsters. Underwater monsters. In the fourth place are the Architects. But if the sleepless converge in naval battle with the Architects, the victory will be ours. After our fifth place, the fleets decrease, almost down to the simple little trading boats with little upgrades, hoping to come to Zargrad in our wake. Their chances are almost non-existent.
Thanks for the information. I thanked her from the heart, trying to resist asking where the albatrosses stood. No reason to attract the attention of the sleepless clan to the albatrosses. At least three people there know who I am in the real world.
Please, chuckled the Baroness. I understand that you may have friends in other clans. Perhaps you would like to travel with them. But it would be a disservice to them, Rosgard. Because of you, they will lose the fleet, their equipment, and their own lives, and they will not get to the mainland. You will kill them with your very presence.
Why, I don't think I am cursed.
Actually, you are. The woman didn't agree. Cursed from the moment you became the navigator.
Oh, I drawled. Well, thanks.
I'm serious. How do you see the sea voyage across the vast ocean? Do you think it will be something like a peaceful sea convoy with colorful flags on the masts and cheerful shouts of a joyous team? I would like that, too. But if it were so, we would not build warships. I'll tell you, Rosgard, how everything will go. Once the navigator gets aboard one of the ships and they leave the peaceful ports one by one, a terrible tempest will begin. Everyone will begin to drown. I am sure that the first 20 nautical miles, 2/3 of the ships sent on the campaign, will be overcome. Do you have any idea how many players and clans will be left with nothing? Hundreds. And this is just the beginning. When the coast is just beginning to clear, what is next will be worse. Weaklings will be eliminated. Some will wait on the shore in safety, waiting until the coast is clear. Then they will start again, while the core armada will continue to move to the lost continent, after the line of salvation.
Following what? I interrupted, barely able to keep the anxiety out of my mind.
"The line of salvation," repeated the Baroness, looking at me. Noticing my brief confusion, her eyes widened sharply. "Roscard, do not tell me that you haven't read The Commandments of the Navigator and other literature about the upcoming campaign."
"I won't tell you so," I nodded.
"You haven't read it."
"Yes, I have not," I shrugged. "Didn't have time, you know."
"You're kidding."
"Nope."
"All right, then," said the girl, defeated. "And you are really interesting."
"Yes," sounded a familiar voice at the top of the stairs. "Interesting. Sis?"
"Brother?"
"I want you to teleport me and my friends,"
slowly but very seriously drawled Orbit,
"now. And I'm very angry with you. Very."
"I understand," the Baroness nodded gently, clearly not wanting to worsen her relations. "Brother, I didn't mean to offend you so. I just really needed to talk about important things with Roscard. And he doesn't mind the conversation, right, Roscard? After all, we're friends, right?"
"I don't involve myself in family matters," I said. Giving me a scorching glance, the Baroness looked back at her soft-spoken strange brother.
"Bro,
Boozia,"
said the bald elf with emotion, but did not finish.
"Do not call me that,"
growled his sister, hitting the arm of her chair.
"You are not friends," Orbit didn't seem to notice her shout. "You called him a reckless idiot."
"Hush!"
"Brazen idiot,"
uttered the elf, nearly syllable by syllable.
"An idiot."
"That's how it is, huh?" I said sadly, smiling to my face and saying whatever you want at my back, hm?
"I was a little upset by the way we talked last time," the Baroness smiled, giving her brother a withering look. "After you sent me to hell, Roscard."
"But you didn't go," I smiled and sighed. "Orbit, let us talk for a bit. I'm not offended. She already told me that you are not involved. Boosia is bad, and you are good."
"Good!"
The face of the bald elf brightened, and he turned back to the stairs.
"Talk!"
"Boosia is bad?"
the Baroness hissed, just as the bald elf with the torn ears disappeared from our sight.
"You know what?"
"So there is a line of salvation?" I asked, pretending that nothing had happened.
"You should definitely read all about it, if that's possible," snorted the Baroness, calming. "Now you haven't read the documents, and again ruined my plans of conversation. How am I supposed to discuss this with you if about these very matters you know nothing? What, do you not care at all about the campaign? Or is this a special trick?"
"Not in the least," I pulled one of the phrases of my father. "I look forward with impatience. I prepare with all my forces. Believe me, I have many other urgent matters in addition to the campaign to Zargrad. And the commandments of the Navigator, I'll read them for sure. Today, as soon as I get out of Valdira and out of the cocoon. In any case, where do I stand in your naval battle to eliminate competitors for the Lost Continent? And where are my theoretical friends with whom I could travel to the land? And why am I cursed?"
"The squadron led by the Navigator is prone to attack," said the Baroness. "For example, by us, the Sleepless. Because, dear Roscard, you are unique, especially because of your skills as the Navigator, which give your fleet positive effects, one of which is to increase the speed of the fleet led by you. You understand. By the way, did you know that you can no longer drown in ocean and sea water?" suddenly asked the head of the Sleepless clan. "Certainly not. After all, you have not read the commandments."
"I didn't know," I admitted carefully. "I cannot drown at all?"
"The Acolotes need a navigator, too," the Baroness explained, smiling. "Their fleets will also try to get to Zargrad at any cost, and will be sure to try to pick up the navigator for themselves. They'll put you on the back of some underwater sea monster and so on. So yes, until the mainland of the lost continent of Zargrod is found, you might as well walk across the ocean floor. Just don't go too deep. Pressure is pressure. Into the darkest depths only Acolotes can descend. And they have battleships. Acolot submarine fleets will also sneak up a few meters from the surface and sabotage the ships of landsmen. Trust me, they have water mines in this world also. And not only that, but a lot of things even more dangerous as well. To put it bluntly, you're like a big piece of meat dipped in a pond with hungry sharks and huge flocks of small piranhas. Everyone wants to grab you. And if the navigator doesn't choose, they'll steal you. You can go on any ship you wish, but the ship can sink. And as soon as one goes to the ocean bottom, you will teleport to the nearest friendly ship, automatically becoming their leader. If no other friendly ships are close by, if, say, our whole armada is overwhelmed and all of our ships sink...
I still port to the nearest ship, I said slowly. Any ship, this is logical.
Right. I'm not saying that it is we who are the main villains. We are all wicked. Besides those small fleets, for whom it will be stupid to oppose powerful marine fleets. It turns out you don't have much of a choice, Navigator. Even if you decide to put together half a dozen of your own ships and put together a team of friends and acquaintances, go out into the open ocean, and you'll immediately come under attack. Your friends will die, their hope will be lost, and you, all the same, will eventually find yourself aboard a ship of the strongest fleet. That's exactly what the Amritas want.
Broken hope? I chuckled ironically, at the same time collecting all my ideas in a heap. The Baroness had made me think.
Cash expenses, briefly replied the Baroness, for clans to build up their ships as much as possible, and then to lose everything as the ships go down. But at the same time, players get an unforgettable experience. Sea battles, sinking giant ships, roaring waves, raging storms, sea monsters scouring the depths. All of this will be, Rosgard. Instead of a tour in a lounge with tropical beauties and a piña colada on hand, searing flames.
And I was hoping for a beach chair, I sighed sadly, and then, turning abruptly serious, looked at the Baroness. Thank you.
For what?
I learned a lot, I said, and I'll learn even more. In the meantime, I'm guessing you want to know if I want to join the fleet of the Sleepless Clan.
Yes, the Baroness said instantly. And, in addition to all that, you will receive 10 tickets to the flagship. This is to ensure that you can bring your friends. I say this so that you will understand. You will not be alone among strangers. Close friends, relatives, invite anyone. Share an exciting journey. A trifle, but still nice.
I understand, I said, and shook my head. Right.
The capitalist approach.
The head of the Sleepless gave me a very broad and charming smile.
But this is not important. In addition to the bonuses, you get a serious guarantee that you will not have to be the primitive wife. I believe that this is important.
The what now? I was amazed.
This is when you are clubbed on the head, grabbed by the hair, and are told, "Welcome to my cave," explained the Baroness. Early men treated women in this way.
"Oh, ho, ho," I said, "a charming comparison. But if everything is so simple, why bother to talk with me? Simply wait until I go out to sea in a leaky tub and sink it to the dogs and take me. Then you don't have to give me all the bonuses. Take me by the hair and off to the cave. In this case, the flagship."
"Somehow I don't believe that you will decide to go to sea in a leaky trough," the Baroness smiled. "You don't look like a fool."
"Thank you."
"So, you will choose a strong and large fleet, that of the Architects, or even the Acolotes. And what will such a victory cost me? After all, I'd have to sink all the enemy ships to get to one little morsel."
"Morsel, right."
"In the attack, I will lose a lot of ships," slowly continued the woman, "and become easy prey for the next ardent navigable file."
Who?
You didn't know? Smiled the girl. Now, in Valdira, that's what we call those strenuously seeking the navigator. Anyway, I'm not ready to sacrifice the greater part of my fleet in order to get to you.
Well, I can't get to the Acolotes, I said, considering. Although, if I can't drown in seawater, I can walk to their city on foot.
You do not have to walk, said the Baroness. Just go out to the open sea and shout, I'm the navigator, and marine reptiles will crawl to you from all sides.
That's true, I agreed. Crawl they will. Okay, but what about the attacks on you, those who want the navigator for themselves?
I know 10 opponents who are willing to try it, she sighed. So the campaign will depend not only on strength, but on tactics, and strategy above all. Frankly, I'm not very skilled in naval battle, so we are going to have to find someone specializing in that. We are working on it. Do you know anyone well-versed in the command of ships or maritime clashes? I won't skimp, as they say, on the price.
I spoke thoughtfully. For obvious reasons, many thoughts were flashing through my head. When your father is an admiral with experience in long voyages, with real combat experience... Overall, the first thought that visited me was that the Baroness really knows who I am in the real world. Does she know that Rosgard is Rostislav Grohotov, son of the Admiral Grohotov? I recounted the people who knew me in real life. Gosha, Kira, Vlas, and maybe half of the albatrosses. God knows how they are with secrecy and the discussion of secret affairs. Damn, I could almost lose my mind with fear. Or, just a coincidence, maybe they really needed a maritime specialist. I kept a thoughtful and indifferent expression on my face with noticeable difficulty. I was silent for half a minute more and shook my head. That's a problem.
It's a shame, she sighed.
So you need one that much? I asked. The storybook fleet of Valdira had little resemblance to a fleet in the real world, although...
But of course, nodded the Baroness. It's similar, the principles are the same, including ship classes, from the torpedo boats to aircraft carriers. Therefore, we want to hire a professional.
You know, I hesitated a little, and then continued, why not? You can put even a real-life commander on the flagship, but it won't be any use. You need someone with experience with combat conditions, the division of white and red, maneuvering, improvement of attacks, emergency actions, and more. This is a fleet, so even a very experienced person solves very little. In any case, the campaign has already begun. But if you can find him in advance, give him the layout, you can develop some preliminary strategies, a general plan. Maybe he'll have time to work out a joint maneuver, though it is doubtful. It isn't a matter of one day or even one week.
Ooh, said the Baroness. And you know a lot about the Navy. Are you keen on it?
Nah, I chuckled, swearing to myself. Not really. Just read about it a lot myself. So, Busia,
don't,
she snapped, but immediately went limp and chuckled.
You're prickly.
And you're sly, I retorted with a shrug. So, we can consider our conversation completed for now?
You think?
The Baroness was surprised.
We haven't even discussed your wishes, and not even the price.
Price, I said. Yes, we haven't discussed it. I have to say respectably, distinguished head of the Sleepless Clan, gaining gold as payment will simply not do.
Really?
She nodded in understanding. She clearly didn't expect anything less, that's for sure. It's nice not to be taken for a bog creature anymore, and not to be bought cheaply. Really, I confirmed, and a lot. I have been given a chance, and I'm going to milk it. So... Think about the amount that you can offer me. As soon as the campaign is over, I return to a normal player no different than the others. But while the campaign hasn't even started, I am unique. You wrote that yourself on the forum.
Oh, so you did read it after all.
Oh, yes, I smiled. I read it, including the phrase in which you mentioned that I won't be disappointed. I'm sure that you've thought about what you're willing to pay to get the navigator on your flagship. You and your army of analysts have calculated how much money you will be able to give if you are the first to get to Zargrod. And, for some reason, it seems to me that you didn't count in gaming gold, but in dollars. All this to get the prestige of the discoverers.
Speaking of prestige, I'll be Columbus, the Baroness glanced at me. If we come to an agreement, and I am sure that we can reach an understanding, I specifically shall be Columbus.
Clarify, I said.
The first step on the shore of the lost continent, I'll be the one to take it, she said briefly. Not you. You'll be the one who shows the way, and I'll be the one who sets foot on Zargrod first.
Seems like this isn't just about prestige.
Yes, confirmed the Baroness. Not only that. Let's just say a lot depends on who first sets foot on the continent. I trust you know what I mean.
There was a long pause, during which we both gathered our thoughts. Oh, yeah, I understood all right what the Baroness was talking about. This was, at the very least, a unique achievement, which one cannot surpass, gaining huge bonuses in Zargrod. And not only this, actually this was a small piece of the pie, not even a part, but only the crust. Getting to the Lost Continent first gives the Sleepless Clan lots of bonuses, and if the Sleepless reach Zargrod with a significant margin, say a day earlier, or at least 5 to 10 hours, under fanfare, the Baroness will make her triumphant first step upon the shore, smile, look back, and give the go-ahead to her men. Then all the ships will gush players of the Sleepless Clan, instantly dividing into groups. Destruction of new monsters, urgent study of the surrounding lands for hidden treasures, unique items, legendary equipment, one-time quests, and more, hordes of locusts eating everything in their path. On the northern resort where my favorite daddy had sent me, I had read many books, including ones about the Aztecs and the Spaniards who colonized them. The Baroness would be the new Cortez, conqueror, robber, but unlike Cortez, she wouldn't share with anyone. This is where my imagination fails me. It is simply impossible to imagine how much wealth there is in Zargrod. One only need to try to imagine it, and the mouth goes dry immediately. But I was thinking now only of the material things, only that which can be directly taken and dragged into a vault. This was just the tip of the iceberg. There are also political motives. Probably there are some sensible locals in Zargrod, and maybe even a new race. And with them we can immediately begin to negotiate, to take under our wing, to build reputation and establish trade. And all this at a time when the rest of the clan ships haven't even come close to the shores of Zargrod. Timing is everything. I'm not a strategist, but for some reason, I firmly believe that as soon as the fleet of Sleepless players land on the shore and unload their cargo, then they will immediately turn around and move in the opposite direction, in a hurry to the ships of the remaining clans, and they will give them a final battle, destroying the competition in a suicide attack. Because the clan won't have to feel sorry for ships, unlike those who will have yet to reach the goal. I am sure that the Sleepless fleet would then cease to exist, but they would sink down many ships in the process too. And if the Sleepless operate in conjunction with the Acolotes, it will be simply deadly. After all, landsmen are no match for divers. Land races don't care about the ocean floor, and marine life doesn't have anything to do with green forests and deserts. I think that the Baroness and her staff of analysts have thought through all the details and have written hundreds of pages on such possible developments. This is not a game. Everything is much more serious now. And it all comes down to the final and most important conclusion. Simple and incredibly ancient. It's all about profit. spit on prestige, spit on the glory of the discoverer, spit on the picture in each of the hotels in Valdira, and definitely spit on the envy of the other players. To hell with it all, aside from benefits. Benefits are material. If the Sleepless Clan is the first to Zargrod, they will earn millions.
Right, I said. I understand you. Treasures, influence. The city.
City?
Read the literature, Rosgard, the Baroness sighed. Be sure to read it. Everything is written out. The first clan to reach Zargrod can choose a place to put a teleport, which will connect the mainland and the rest of the players to the Lost Continent.
And what will you get from this, ownership of the teleport?
No, the teleport will be shared, but the land within a radius of 3 kilometers of the spire will belong to our clan, slowly said the Baroness. That is, if I select the location for the teleport and send back materials for the construction professionals and artisans. And if we fully construct a teleport of our own resources, the clan will own the land within a radius of 5 kilometers around the spire.
Land which will be subsequently home to urban buildings, I concluded.
Right. The central part of the future city will belong to the Sleepless Clan, the Black Baroness smiled sweetly, including the main square, with shops, stores, should I continue?
No, I shook my head. Not worth it.
All right, she smiled. We'll agree for sure, Navigator. For sure. Let's start right now.
No, I refused. I am right on the verge of decay now, far too long in Valdira. And besides, these things should be discussed with a fresh mind, right?
True, nodded the Baroness. You really have been in the game too long.
Oh, so she knows for sure how long I've been in the game. This means all this time they've been watching me, and I noticed nothing.
Maybe you'll join your friends after all? Suggested the Baroness,
gently rising from her chair.
They are celebrating victory. Your victory.
No. I rose in turn, laughing. They celebrate your victory. We are just extras. But you're right. I won't leave like an Englishman. I'll stay for half an hour.
That's good. And at the same time, we'll get to know each other more, smiled the woman. Please, Rosgard, the table is waiting for you. By the way, when will we continue the negotiations? I do not want to push, but I wish to be sure. I like to know, not guess.
First I shall sleep, I said. I will come to my senses, think everything over, and then, when I come to my senses, I'll write to you immediately.
Right. Just do not wait too long, dear Rosgard, and I think it's better to keep this as secret as possible.
Of course, I said. I want to play, and not run from clans. In any case, there is still time. Well, where's your roast turkey and wine sauce?
Don't have one. Yet. We'll make it, firmly promised the Baroness. We'll be sure to make it.
After exchanging smiles, we moved together to the stairs. On the far side of the library, Doc was busy among the books, completely forgetting about the feast. I did not disturb him. In any case, in half an hour, I'd go home. To the real world. I woke up, heavily and reluctantly. My body simply did not wish to wake up. The first thought that flashed through my head? Well, let him sleep. I just have to get to the cocoon and press the button. But with a heroic effort, I pushed this thought out of my mind and didn't even look in the direction of my sarcophagus. Yawning from ear to ear, I went to the kitchen of my new home. Valdira would wait a little while, but still, and maybe a little longer than that. Why? Well, because I'm too confused by all these incessant events and adventures, both in the real and gaming worlds. And this is bad. No, not like that. Bad would be putting it too mildly. If you have a mess in the gaming world, it's not good and unpleasant. If you have a mess in the real world, it's not good and dangerous. If you have a mess in both worlds, it's terrible. Expect trouble. and I was afflicted with the last, in which the tale of one world appears in the other, the chaotic interweaving between two worlds. When gaming problems hurt businesses and relationships in the real world, that is just complete nonsense. The fact is that I am an ordinary person. I'm not a trained spy who can withstand this on a mental and physical level, not one who can live for years in constant tension with an outwardly calm appearance and a fierce, boiling mind. I'm not like that. I'm normal. And I can't live with my head swirling with negative thoughts like, is this friend really my friend? How should I treat my girlfriend? Are they betraying me now? Or should I believe them or not? And such thoughts only multiply. With each new day, new challenges, and unpleasant puzzles and riddles. Some puzzles can only be solved with a kick. This is when you take the puzzle and send it with a powerful kick to hell. For example, this was the only way for me to deal with the mystery of Vlas. If he is a rat or not a rat, and if he is digging or not digging. There was no sense in asking Vlas at all. His answer was obvious. It would only add to my problems and grievances. And it was solved simply, with a loud, to hell with it, which meant that I would not share any secrets with my old friend, but that my relationship with him would be kept smooth and friendly. Overall, I had a lot to think about. And so I decided to follow one of the many tips of my stern father. When my father gave me advice, he loved to mull over all of the details, which always left me terribly infuriated. Therefore, I had tried to shrink each of his pieces of advice into a few words or sentences, throwing the entire husk of didactic examples away. The abridged paternal mandate read as follows: if you want to figure something out, sit down in front of a wall and think about it. I had repeatedly seen my father do this since childhood. If he needed to make a really important decision, he took a hard wooden chair, put it in the corner of two bare walls, and sat there for several hours, silently. You couldn't disturb him at this time, and watching was boring. But when my dad got up, a decision was always made. Sometimes it was unexpected, but it was a decision nevertheless. I know one thing. When I came back from the north and before my departure from home, my father said, "Before sending you there, I forgot to sit facing the wall." In his language, it probably meant the following: "Son, I'm sorry. I am sorry for everything. I sent you to that dismal place without thinking. Forgive your foolish father." Probably. But I didn't want to clarify, and nodded silently and walked to the exit. Although my friends and I did some nonsense then, maybe it was worth such a punishment. I may not be Einstein, but I can formulate a simple plan. First, to think. A thoughtful reading of all the literature on the Navigator and everything related to journeying. And only then return to Valdira, and a thoughtful assessment of the accumulated assets in my personal room, with its most recent additions. It was time to raise my stats, and fast, and for this I needed the proper equipment. And I had it. The Silver Legend. Time to use it to the fullest benefit. But first, the most important thing, to think about business in the real world. This comes first. For this reason, I waited for the kettle to boil, made some strong black coffee with sugar, went outside, brushed some foliage off of a stool positioned outside, sat on it, and stared at the wall, gently sipping the hot, invigorating drink and thinking at my leisure. Of course, this didn't measure up to my father's brainstorms, but I needed to spread out my thoughts. The problem is that, recently, I have been living in the style of the words "for later." There is the problem. I will solve it later. Right now is not the time, and so on and so on. As a result, the problems have accumulated to the extent that you cannot move them without a bulldozer. I probably exaggerate, but still. For example, Kira the Trouble. I do not know why, but I cannot get her out of my head. I would say that I'm in love, but I'm not sure yet. Attached, surely, but love? I wasn't ready to admit such a fatal diagnosis. And in any case, the current form of our relationship could not continue. It would have to either develop or to stop. Not to say that I'm the perfect guy, but I could not treat Kira cheaply, I don't know why. She fell into my soul. What a misery. No wonder people say that trouble comes unexpectedly. I enjoyed the bachelor lifestyle, lived peacefully, and then, bang, a package in checkered plaid, take it and sign here. Holy smoke! And how has Kira hooked me so? Her sincerity and spontaneity. After the experience of living together with the impossibly mannered and righteous Elena, Kira looked like a volcano against the background of an iceberg. To put it bluntly, this morning I realized, with some horror, that I would like to see Kira peacefully snoring next to me, just to see and experience it. Not for sex, but just to have her near. That's it. Fin. The end. Hook, line, and sinker. If this is not love, then there is only a short way to go. And now, instead of developing the relationship, or at least keeping it alive, I was playing spy. No, I had a good reason to do so, and I have something to hide. Still, even if I were to forget everything related to Valdira, I just wanted clarity. After drinking a sip of coffee, I made an effort to forget about Kira and focused on the good clan of the Albatrosses, including this issue of Gasha and Vlas. All except Kira. Ugh, again I am thinking about her. Don't think of trouble, don't think of trouble. I wonder what she's doing now. Ugh! Oh, no, this will not do. No thinking is happening when all my thoughts always slip to the same topic. Okay, we will make the question clear. And, at the same time, walk to the nearby store. There's one not too far, but not particularly close. Getting up from the stool, I grimaced in annoyance. This damn conspiracy, also nonsense. If Gasha is searching for me, he won't find me. But if more serious people will be looking, they'll find me if necessary. And, not to be found, I have to go as far away as possible from the city and not just rent a house from an old friend. Why will they find me? Because this is their profession, to find. For example, Kira. Again, Kira, in my head. This is real trouble. All right, let there be Kira. She's probably thinking of me, too. Probably. Her dad will be able to find me, for example. At the request of his beloved little girl, he gifts her with expensive toys. Can it be that the first assistant of the mayor has friendships with the same FBS? Easily. Will people whose profession it is to seek be able to find me? Yes, they will. I shouldn't build illusions. They don't even have to give a very good reason. They'll just find me and inform about it. Oral and written reports. And if necessary, will haul in my totally bound and terrified body. I cannot do anything against the pros. This isn't a film, but a reality. Kira is just an example. In any case, won't get out of my head. But people can very well look for me, no joke. Out on the porch, I put the key into the lock, paused for a moment, and nodded slowly to myself. And for the first time, I realized the seriousness of the situation. Apparently, even a brief contemplation of the wall helps. I had a huge problem, and I was like a stupid moose breaking out into the field to eat the grass and be merry. They were absolutely looking for me, the same clan of the sleepless, knowing that I am the navigator. The facts were simple, and it was eerily scary. I was bathed in sunlight, standing in the courtyard, but a chill ran down my back, as though decay had found me in the real world. An imaginary chain of events lined up into a very real one. For example, the clan of the Black Baroness. First, the sleepless know that the character Rosgard is the great navigator. Second, if the sleepless have a mole placed in the Albatross clan, they will soon find out that the character Rosgard belongs to a certain Rostislav Grohotov. It is enough to imagine that Vlas is the mole, and things are already scary. Because they will not only know my name, but also my old address, physical description, names of friends and of relatives. Third, I don't live at the old address, so they will begin to seek me. Then everything depends on who exactly is looking. If they are simple amateurs, they won't find me. If they are serious people, they might find me. Fourth, when they find me, they will act very simply. First, they will show the seriousness of their intentions, and then they will force me to give up the title of navigator. And when that happens, the card will have been played. There would be no reason to leave me alive, because I would immediately throw myself in communication with representatives of the administration of Valdira and will start a long and plaintive wail about the bad things that happened to me. No, they won't allow that. I will suddenly disappear forever, or suddenly commit suicide, or get hit by a car, or both together. They won't put me in a psych ward for sure, because my admiral father would pull me out quickly and begin to dig, to find out if his son is really crazy, or if there is some funny business going on. And what did I do in order to avoid this bad outcome? Nothing clever. I went to an old friend and rented a house in the outskirts I like in splendid isolation, as though trying to make things easier for the alleged bad guys. After all, I took off under the watchful eye of Barbara Pavlovna. And what to do now? The right thing. Move to a place where no one will think to look for me. To an unfamiliar city. Rent an apartment from strangers. To buy a bunch of food and hide in a hole until all the fever with the lost continent ends. But now it's too late to try. There is little money left. In theory, I can return to my lonesome dwelling and strengthen my defenses. A powerful door, lattices on the windows, an alarm system. Right. And then the bad guys will only be hit by electricity. As soon as the whole system is reset, they'll try it again. The electrical bill is my Achilles heel. One can't get to Valdira without an electrical kick. Maybe to buy some high-powered batteries? Put a generator in the house? Bullshit. Though, depends on which way you look at it. In any case, I need a den in which I can be sure no one will find me. I do not want to die. And if I go back to my home? My parents' apartment isn't in a location which is easy to get to, and the neighbors aren't simple there. Generally, nothing is simple there. No, this option will not work. I didn't want to involve my parents in the problem, but to call my father and explain the situation is inevitable. Just in case. What if someone takes my mother hostage and demands I hand over the name of Navigator? But this is overkill. But I didn't want to risk it. For that kind of money, you never know what people will do. So, I'll ring my dad right away. But first, I was going to mentally rehearse what I was to say. I didn't want to accidentally blurt something like, "Dad, I'm the Navigator now, so take care of Mom. She might be kidnapped." My father's reaction will be predictable, and he will immediately come to the city with people in white coats, and will put me in the loony bin himself. I will rehearse my speech and call. I'll just buy a cheap cell and SIM card. What if people are already tapping my phone calls? Oh, and here is the paranoia again. It was seizing me, as people say. And now I had personally led myself right to the nervous breakdown button. I'm walking down the empty street and looking nervously from side to side, just like in bad spy movies. Where is this damn store already? All that I had imagined, this was, of course, the worst-case scenario, the worst of all. But when I thought of how they pumped Kira with unknown drugs and rammed Gasha's car that night, my step quickly accelerated. The shop was where I had expected it to be, and soon I had a large bottle of mineral water and some food, and the phone with a new SIM card, and a small amount of money in the account. I dialed the number and heard the dial tone, and soon heard a familiar and neutral-sounding voice. "Hello?" The number was unfamiliar to her. "It's me." I couldn't think of anything more intelligent.
"You!"
"Yeah," I said. "How are you?"
"I'm gonna...
I'm gonna...
Kiss me? I suggested, feeling a smile spread over my face.
Kill you! Ross, how could you?
What have I done? I was amazed. Maybe they had already found out about my escapades with the clan unable to sleep.
Should I list the things? Came the hurt answer. I can. You turned off your phone, didn't call me, didn't write, blocked my messages in Valdira, and you promised to call just yesterday. There, aren't you ashamed?
Very, I answered honestly, because I had really promised to call, but the game had detained me longer than I had planned. I'm sorry, I'll make it up to you.
I thought the worst, from your fiery death to a mistress.
Oh, I held out. So my death is nothing special, no big deal, but a mistress is the worst-case scenario?
Yeah.
I cannot possibly have a lover, I sighed, holding the water bottle between my knees and trying to put the cap back on with my free hand.
I'm glad. And why is that?
Because I'm not married, I answered.
Well,
I was in Valdira, I hurried. There was a lot that happened there. Sorry, Kira, honestly, I didn't want everything to get so ugly. I mean it. I'll make it up to you.
With what? Asked Kira. How will you make it up?
Whatever you say, I chuckled. Kira, listen.
Hmm?
I have a question for you. An important one, a serious one.
Maybe we can meet? There you can ask the question. After I kill you and curse over your remains... The apartment is free. Well, the one we were in, then. You'll come?
Yes, I said, without hesitation. When will you be there?
Already leaving, she said cheerfully. I'm home, just have to get dressed, and that's all. We'll be there in an hour.
In an hour? But you only have to get dressed.
Exactly. That is fast for me.
In half an hour, I said, somewhat impatiently.
Okay,
Kira easily agreed.
I want to get to you so badly that I won't even argue. Still, you're just...
Don't be mad, I said. I'll cook you a gorgeous breakfast.
And lunch and dinner, said Kira firmly.
Okay.
Good. By the way, whose number are you calling from?
My own. Just bought it. Don't even think about giving it to anyone.
I wasn't going to, said Kira in an offended tone. And why did you... Anyway, let's talk on that later. I'm going to get ready. When we meet, we'll talk. Kisses.
Kiss, I only had time to say, and the connection was lost. She's quick. A quick talk, but my heart was already lighter. I hadn't quite finished my thinking, but I will have time. It is necessary to clarify the most important things. And I'll start with Kira. Time to deal with all of the unknowns. The cab driver was silent and completely focused on the road, which I was completely satisfied with. The road was long, and I still had time to think. There was no thinking wall here, but the current of thoughts was not obstructed by this. I would see Kira soon, so my head was temporarily set free of thinking of the extravagant trouble. Taking advantage of this respite, I turned on my old cell and checked the inbox. I checked it, and just as quickly turned it off without waiting for someone to call and discover that it was on again. Looking at the mobile, I was somewhat stunned. A whole bunch of messages. From people I know, that's good. And to be specific, 6 messages from Vlas. He's still looking hard for me. A few from old friends, who I had met with that evening at the restaurant. 4 messages from Kira, understandable. 6 messages from Elena. Now that's unusual. After my divorce, my ex-wife didn't write me a single message, nor did she call me. And now suddenly, this. 6 messages. I read them and was even more puzzled. The first message from her was simple.
Rostislav, I called you twice.
A standard message from my ex. One I had certainly seen before. Back in the days when we first started dating. This meant that Elena had called me, realized that my phone was switched off, and expressed displeasure in a disguised form. Its implied message was that I should call back immediately. Next came more messages.
Rostislav, be so kind as to call me. Rostislav, call. Rostislav, this is impolite.
As always, her messages formal and confusing, as though she can't just write simply.
Hey, I cannot get through. The phone is cut off. As soon as you read this, give me a call immediately.
But no, Elena cannot say this. It's not in her nature. I wasn't going to call her for sure. In the first place, I didn't want to talk. Secondly, I didn't want to involve more people in the unfolding events. No reason for it. And why did she need to talk to me so suddenly? Certainly not so that I could help her hang curtains or move a dresser. Had there been a leap of jealousy at the sight of Kira? Maybe. I couldn't think of any other answers. Well, let her be jealous. A day or two and it'll wear itself out. The most recent messages were from my mother and father. Three from mother and one from father. My mother's messages were in her usual affectionate manner, asking why I did not write and did not ring, interested if everything is in order and if everything is all right with my finances. My conscience was immediately stung. What kind of son am I? My father was brief. Son, your mother worries. Not good. Awaiting report to home base.
Damn, of course he can't just write,
Son, we are worried. Call. But no. Awaiting report to home base. And it's always been like this, right from the start. Dad, the home base. Mom, the mothership. The son, a cabin boy. From birth right up until now. The kitchen, the galley. My room, the cabin room, where everything must shine. Mother and father's bedroom, the captain's cabin. Nothing to do for a cabin boy there. Instead of, show me your report card, sonny, he always said, present the logbook, cabin boy. And if it wasn't all A's, then things began to get bad. A sailor must know math perfectly well so he can calculate the way home and bring the ship to port. A sailor must know the Russian language well to be able to express himself clearly and accurately. A sailor must know foreign languages to better communicate with the enemy. The sailor must run faster and jump higher than a land rat, because you're not a land rat, you're a sailor. The seafarer must be able to stand for himself and honor the motherland. He must have a strong body, not the convex belly of a slacker. 20 push-ups. And these kinds of boring sermons continued until I brought home a card with an A in chemistry and, jabbing my finger on the mark, blurted out, A sailor must know chemistry very well, so he can make a bomb and send this damn ship right to hell. After that, my father didn't speak to me for a month. A good month it was, quiet and calm. How many times I had run away from home, but always returned. Since my mother, unlike my severe father, was soft and panicked early. Memories of a happy childhood, oh. I couldn't continue my mental reasoning. We had arrived. After paying, I flew up the stairs and pressed the call button. Inside the apartment came a ring. A heavy door immediately opened, and trouble stood in front of me. She appeared, and I was immediately dealt a fatal blow, in the sense that Kira instantly poked me in the ribs and muttered, That's for the secrecy. Kiss. More. And more. Hey, we are standing in the stairwell. Maybe we'll continue inside? Inside there shall be disassembling. I'll disassemble you for spare parts. What for? I asked, openly admiring her, dressed in a loose summer sundress. Trouble is so beautiful that it's just trouble. All my clever ideas immediately lost.
There are reasons. For starters, here.
A sheet of paper was thrust into my hand. We kissed again, and Kira dragged me into the apartment by my hand. Hardly time enough to close the door. Stepping after Kira, I looked mechanically at the paper. It was printed on a flyer, professional and colorful. After reading the first few lines, I stopped short and, pulling Kira to me, embracing her waist, croaked dumbfoundedly,
What is this? Exactly.
The paper read as follows. Lizanna the Ravishing in the Dungeons of Darkness. The intrigue grows. Passions increase. He was running. The villain made a daring escape from the royal prison, marking his way with innocent blood. Hiding in the grim darkness of the dungeon, the dark wizard regained his strength, surrounded himself with an army of demons, conducted his dark rituals, and he succeeded. Lysana was kidnapped. With his nasty dark magic, he twists the mind of the island queen, intending to recline with her in a bed of roses and lilies. He won't back down. He will get his way. He thirsts for her. Soon, the hit continues. Lysana and the Dark Wizard. Will the wily villain get his way? Will the valiant troops led by the Knight Augustus the Serene interfere with his plans as they descend into the dungeons of Algora in order to find the villain, punish him, and release Lysana? Will they be in time? After all, if they are not, the Dark Wizard will put his paws on the luxurious body of Lysana and turn her into his toy for the pleasures of love. On whose side is fate this time? You will know very soon. Filming has already begun. Coming soon, super hit, erotic drama, Lysana and the Dark Wizard. Under the beautifully executed text were located a few illustrations in the shape of a triangle. At its peak, Lysana, wide-eyed, in a torn dress, seductively pressing her hands to her ample bosom, apparently frightened, but still hyper-sexy. In the lower right corner, tall and broad-shouldered, square-jawed knight with dazzling blue eyes and lush wheat hair, apparently Augustus the Serene, a real stallion. And in the lower left corner, me, myself, strapped to a pole with many ropes and chains, with an angry expression and frowning eyes, my mouth in a wry grin, fingers curled. Next to me was the inscription, "The Dark Mage," with letters colored with black streaks and bloody crimson.
"Well, Dark Mage," Kira purred as she clung to me, "so you're thirsty then, and are going to lay in a bed of lily petals? Explain."
"Of course not," I was indignant. "What the hell? I wasn't going to capture anyone."
"But you thought about it."
"Well, yes, just now, when I read the poster. Damn, Lysana and Augustus are the last people I need. To hell with them, together with this erotic drama."
"So, anyway, Dark Wizard, if you plan to capture, then I'll just... no help of Augustus the Serene will be required."
"I'm not going to capture anyone."
"What about recline?"
"And I will certainly not recline either. Ugh, I tell you, I didn't know about this at all. Ugh. As if I didn't have any other problems. Where did this poster come from, anyway?"
"It's the second day I've seen it in the network. Fans of Lysana tearing to pieces with excitement. I looked on their website," said Kira, "in search of materials about the Dark Mage. It said that the director had already gone down into the catacombs of Algora and started the preliminary shooting. Also pointed to negotiations with the actor in the role of the Dark Mage, whose arrival we had witnessed in the brief episode during a procession through the city. Ross, I'm serious. I won't forgive you."
"But I wasn't going to do any of that. I wasn't aware. And no one negotiated with me. So calm down. Let me kiss you."
"I'm serious.
I'm serious, too."
"Well, damn."
Standing on the balcony, I looked thoughtfully at the panorama of the city, and thought, looking at the stars. The white sparks were almost invisible, not like in the far north. But right now my biggest problems weren't to do with poorly visible stars. All day. I had been here for the whole day. Time passed by unnoticed, but it was very nice. Kira was splashing in the bath. In the kitchen hissed a heaping plate, giving off aromas of fried chicken. Another 5 to 7 minutes, and we can eat. A very, very late dinner. The time was now almost 2 in the morning. Yeah, time passes fast when you're having fun. I didn't even notice the day pass. The telephone was off, including the home phone. No worries, no distractions, like a gaming cocoon in the middle of the floor. Nothing at all reminiscent of the game. The soft light of a lamp, the soft mutter of the television, and Kira and I talking about various trifles, cozy atmosphere for sure. But I haven't spoken to her about the main thing. I haven't even touched on the topic. But it directly affects Kira. If things were to get ugly, then people could easily find out about my relationship